This is a CBC podcast.
CBC podcasts are supported by HP Print Studio. Express your brand with HP Print Studio. Find free, customized templates to build your business identity, like letterhead, business cards, and shipping labels. Start the journey at www.hp.ca/print.
Hi, I'm Belmar Saint-Laurent. You're listening to a podcast of C'est la vie, a program about life in French-speaking Canada. This week on the program, we're going to meet a Vancouver man who thinks that the conventional way of teaching language is all wrong.
I think one of the major problems we have in language instruction, and this is certainly true in our school system, is that we try to get people to produce the language too early, and they're bound to fail.
Steve Kaufman has developed an alternative way of learning languages, and it sure has worked for him. He speaks French, Japanese, Mandarin, Spanish, and Swedish. He's also fluent in German, Italian, and Cantonese. And these days, he's working on his Russian. He's reading Pushkin. Steve Kaufman's a former diplomat. He owns a lumber company in BC, but his real passion is a website that he's created for language learning. It's called link.com. You spell it LINGQ.com. I reached Steve Kaufman in Vancouver. Steve Kaufman, hello.
Hello.
So tell me, you came to Montreal from Sweden when you were a small child.
Right.
What was it like experiencing another language?
Well, I was 5 years old, and so I have no recollection of moving from Swedish to English. I went to school, grade one, I had my friends, I probably had an accent, I wasn't aware of it, and within 2 years or so I couldn't speak any Swedish. My parents said, we're in Canada now, and you're going to learn English. I mean, we were in the English part of Montreal, and so I became a Montreal Anglophone painlessly. I have no recollection of speaking Swedish, although I did for the first 5 years of my life.
And in the house, what language did your parents speak?
Well, they spoke English with my brother and me, but they were originally from Czechoslovakia, and so they actually spoke mostly German to each other, German and Czech.
So,
because we're a Jewish family. I mean, you have to remember, my grandparents were born in the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Huh. So there was no attempt at all to maintain a sense of family tradition.
No.
Or a language and culture. You were coming to Canada, and that was it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And bear in mind that they had left Czechoslovakia to go to Sweden. And so then in Sweden, we spoke Swedish. And I must say, in my family, including my uncle who lives in Sweden, the approach has always been, if you're in Sweden, you speak Swedish. If you're in Canada, you speak English. Or perhaps today it would have been French, but basically, this is quite topical in Quebec these days, but yeah, you fit in. You're here now.
That's it. Yeah. Okay, so now you've learned English.
Mm-hmm.
How did you come to learn French?
Well, I was a typical, Anglophone. We had French at school. I wasn't very interested. I couldn't speak it. But we had a professor. I went to McGill, and he had a course in French civilization. And it was, of course, French civilization is attractive in itself, but he was an excellent professor. And I've always said that the key role of a teacher is to turn on the student.
Absolutely.
He turned me on.
Oh, great. And what was the key element that made it possible for you to learn?
My enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Because, if you're in Montreal, you can learn French. So once I was turned on, I would go and read Le Devoir, and I would listen to French radio, and I went around trying to meet Francophones and try to speak French.
Mm. Okay, so let's continue the progress. How did you come to learn the next language?
Well, what happened was I got so keen on French that I went to France and I studied there for 3 years. And then at the L'Institut d'études politiques in Paris, and I took the foreign service exam, which was offered at the Canadian Embassy in Paris. And I was accepted as a trade commissioner, and I got wind of the fact that they were looking for someone to learn Chinese. And having learnt French, and once you've transformed yourself from someone who doesn't just dabble in another language but actually speaks it comfortably, then you feel confident that you can do it again. And so I said, they're going to send someone to learn Chinese, that's going to be me. So I started taking lessons on my own, didn't learn very much, but then I announced to the management there that I had been learning Chinese on my own, so why not send me? And they said, yeah, that makes sense. So they sent me to Hong Kong, where I studied Mandarin Chinese.
Okay. And the other languages?
Well, after my stint in Hong Kong and in and out of China, then I was posted to Japan. So I learned Japanese, largely in Japan. And then, it's something, once you discover that you're good at doing something, then of course you want to do more of it. So, my bookshelves are lined with books for learning and CDs, and of course in the old days cassette tapes, German, Italian, Spanish, Japanese, Chinese, Swedish, you name it. And most recently, Cantonese and Russian and Korean and Portuguese.
So that'll make a total of...
Once I get...
Russian?
Once I get the Korean, I've dropped it because I'm doing Russian right now, but it would make 12 eventually, but I say 10 right now.
Okay. So when you go about learning a new language, what's your approach?
I am... my approach... let's take the most recent language, which is Russian. I've been learning it on my own for 2 years, an hour a day when I have time, and I hardly ever speak. My belief is that you have to first take in the language, and you have to take in a lot of the language. So I'm now at the stage where I can read, I'm reading and listening to Pushkin right now, The Captain's Daughter, which is a great story. So I'm enjoying the language. I'm doing what I want to do with the language. I don't feel any pressure to speak.
But I'm just wondering, how do you know that you're pronouncing the words properly?
Oh, I know. Because, first of all, I have YouTubes of myself speaking Russian, and I get complimented on my Russian. But having spent such a long time listening to Russian, when I go to make the sounds of Russian, I do a better job than if I tried too hard at the beginning. I think one of the major problems we have in language instruction, and this is certainly true in our school system, is that we try to get people to produce the language too early, and they're bound to fail.
Oh. So then you look at the words, and then where do you go from there? How do you acquire the ability to read the words?
Well, I mean, in the case of Russian, obviously, you've got to spend a little time understanding their alphabet, but it's not that indifferent. It's not like when I learned Chinese, all right? And so if I use our system, Link, for example, which is what I've used for Russian, we have very simple content that's 30 seconds long. So I can listen to it. We have that same content available in English, so I could even listen to the Russian and read in English. I have a sense of what it's all about. Then I listen again, and I read it along, and then I save words that I look up again on the computer. You can immediately see the meaning, and then I save that to a database of words and phrases, which then I review using flashcards. So, and I might listen to that first 30-second content 30 times. And so I do that, what I call intensive listening. In other words, frequently listening to the same content for the beginning stage. And then as you get better, you don't have to listen 30 times. You listen 6 or 7 times and read and save words and then review the words and flashcard them and so forth.
Right. Okay, so some people, I'm sure there are people listening here who are saying, yeah, okay, that's fine for this guy. I mean, he can speak 12 languages. He's got a special gift. Mm-hmm. I'll never be able to do that. What do you think?
Well, I think just about anyone can. I think the key is listening. You got to hear what people are saying, how they're pronouncing it. I mean, I know unilingual English people here in Vancouver who went to Japan and spent a lot of time with Japanese people. And, we have a girl who works in our office. She speaks with an Osaka accent. If people are willing to listen, if they like the language, if they can visualize themselves as a speaker of that language, they can do it.
So where did you get the idea to create a website?
You know, it's a combination of two things. One is I had all these books at home that were full of words that I didn't know, and when you look up in a dictionary, no sooner do you close the dictionary than you've forgotten what the dictionary definition was. So I said, I need a more efficient way to improve my languages. And it's a combination, really, then, of discovering the wealth of audiobooks that are out there, the convenience of MP3 technology, the convenience of the online instant dictionary, and all the things you can do with e-text and sound files. So he said, we can create a much better way of learning. So that was one part of it, like the selfish. I want to do it for myself. And the other part was that we had an immigrant from China who had, high scores on the test of English proficiency, etc., but his English... We had an employee, and his English was very poor, and I realized that a lot of the professional immigrants, in fact, have a lot of trouble with English, and that the established ESL instruction, classroom-based system doesn't serve them very well. So I said, hey, I want it for myself, plus this could be useful to this group of people, so why don't we try and do something? And that was about 6 years ago.
Okay. So what makes your approach different from others?
Well, I think first of all, we put the learner at the center, people choose the content that they want to listen to. So we basically fill up our content with a range of material, always sound and text. I mean, you should never work on something where you don't have the sound. And then the learner chooses the words and phrases that they want to learn, and then it's just very efficient because we keep statistics on the words you're learning, you set goals, you can flashcard these, and largely it's fun. People enjoy doing it, and we don't demand any sort of standards of performance, and people just learn more quickly.
So you said at the beginning, you said that when you were starting to teaching yourself Russian, you might look at something and do it over 30 times.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering how much time does one, say for example, someone wanting to learn French in,
right.
here in Canada,
mm-hmm.
how much time would one have to use the program to be able to acquire the language?
Yeah. Now, the average person going at French in Canada probably had some French in school, so they would be at a bit of an advantage over me going into Russian.
Yeah.
But I think that 45 minutes to an hour a day. But let's look at where I do my studying. I do my studying when I'm gardening, when I'm doing the dishes, when I go for a run, when I'm in my car. The portability of the MP3 player, is it just makes learning languages so convenient. I don't sit down in my chair at home and say, I'm going to listen to Russian for an hour now. I don't do that. If I were to take the time, then I would read. So that it's the convenience of the MP3 player that and the quality of the sound and the availability of good content.
So, so when you're in your car with your MP3 player, you're listening and you're repeating the sounds, or what? How?
I may occasionally, especially in the early stages, repeat along. On our site, we're going to have little phrases that you can click on and hear and repeat, but. I tend not to do that. It's probably not a bad thing to do, but I guess I'm lazy to some extent.
You're just basically listening, I guess.
I'm just basically listening, and initially there are short stories that I'm listening over and over to. Now I'm at the stage where I'm looking forward to the next chapter in whatever story I'm listening to.
And so 45 minutes a day?
Mm-hmm.
For how long a period of time?
Well, you know, in the case of Russian, I've been at it for 2 years.
Yeah.
But, I have no immediate need to go out and speak. So I'm happy doing it. It's something that I enjoy doing. I've gone from Tolstoy to Turgenev to Pushkin. So I am doing what I want to do in the language.
Right.
Now, if for someone in, say, with French, if they have a specific goal, then I would recommend, certainly if they were at Link, that they do take on a tutor so that they can speak to the tutor mm-hmm. via Skype. In fact, I was speaking to a lady from Montreal this morning in English. She's learning English with us, and I would also recommend writing. So if you're in a hurry to produce the language, then it's probably a good idea to have a tutor and to do more writing and speaking.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the bulk of the time is listening. And I think with French, given that we've all had some exposure to it, and the fact that there is more common vocabulary with English than is the case with Russian, I think 6 months you would start to see some really significant improvement.
And why do you think that your approach is more effective than the way it's taught in schools, for example?
Well, my feeling is that why I think mine is better, because it's based on enjoying the language. So if you say to kids who probably aren't that motivated, you're going to have to learn this, you know, parts of speech and these rules, and then we're going to test you on it, I don't think that gets too many people interested. It's like myself when I was at school. Even my kids, I tried to get them to learn French. They weren't interested until my son ended up playing professional hockey in Europe. And so he was playing in Germany and Italy, and he started to see some benefit in learning another language. Now he's interested in French. So I think the problem in school is they don't put enough emphasis on what I said at the beginning, is the need to turn people on to the language. And I think our approach, if we can find content that's of interest, and if we allow people to choose things that are of interest, and we just encourage them to listen and read and to build up their vocabulary, and in our system you can actually see the statistics as your vocabulary is growing, that gives people a sense of satisfaction. All of that, I think, is more positive than trying to force them to remember rules of grammar or to produce the language correctly, which just takes a lot of time and a lot of input, and is better done, I believe, through a process of getting used to the language rather than a process of trying to logically explain the language.
And visualizing yourself as a speaker of the language.
Well, that's right. The motivation is the beginning. Until you say, I want to be a French speaker, and even visualizing yourself. When I speak Chinese or learnt Chinese or Japanese or French, I was one of them. You can't see yourself as an Anglophone timidly trying to learn to say a few words in another language. You've got to say, I'm going to be part of their group.
Now, you've been a diplomat. You have a lumber company in British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it important for you to start this website and language training?
not. But it's become an all-consuming passion. We had this employee from China. We started out developing something that would serve the needs of this sort of immigrant community. In fact, that has not been our market. What has happened, because we're on the Internet, we in fact have more people in Japan, Brazil, Europe, Latin America joining us than immigrants here.
And how many clients do you have so far?
Well, we have now, part of the thing is to get this going, we offer the bulk of our functionality free. So we have about 24,000 free members. It's really only if you need a tutor that you have to pay. So we have a much smaller number of people who are paying for the use of a tutor. But at this stage, that's fine with us. We're hoping to expand and hoping that people will tell their friends. We've got to come up with a value-added proposition that people are also willing to pay for. I think the model on the Internet is that a small number of premium users sort of pay for a large number of free riders.
That's the new trend. That's how you make money on the Internet.
I don't know about making money part yet, but that's what you do in any case.
Right. Hey, Mr. Kaufman, it's been great speaking with you. Thank you very much.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Steve Kaufman is the founder of a language learning website called link.com. That's LINGQ.com. There's a link to it on our website, and our website is cbc.ca/c'est la vie. Well, Steve Kaufman says that his method works, ça marche, and that's our word of the week, marcher, to work and to walk.
Hi, my name is Shirley, and I live in Montreal. I often find myself saying ça marche, like if I'm making an appointment or if I want to pick up a letter or something, I might say ça marche. Est-ce que ça marche pour lundi? Does that work for Monday?
Hi, my name is Rachel. I'm here in Montreal. Well, sometimes I use it in a question, like est-ce que ça marche? Is it working? It can be something really easily. You're trying to get your VCR to work or your DVD player, and you're not quite sure. So est-ce que ça marche? You know, is it functioning?
Hi, my name is James. I'm working at the convenience store on St. Catherine Street. Every year they close the street to permit some artists and stuff to sell their art. That's going to be good for the business. Ça fait marcher les affaires.
Hi, my name is Rosemary. I live in Montreal. I take a dance class and sometimes my teacher says marcher à grands pas, which means to stride. When we're stretching and we're just getting ready, going to our places or doing a slow dance, especially when we're getting to our places, she tells us to go like stand up tall and marcher à grands pas.
Marcher à grands pas. Well, how some folks in Montreal use our word of the week, marcher. And to find out more, let's go to Ottawa to speak with C'est la vie's word lady, Joanne Blais. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, Bernard.
So, marcher, mm-hmm. I'll spell it because it's fairly easy.
Yeah, so ça marche, Bernard, go ahead.
M-A-R-C-H-E-R, marcher. Mm-hmm. Well, literally, it means to walk, but they're so rich in different ways to use marcher.
Mm-hmm. And what's your favorite use of it?
I would have to say ça marche.
Hein? Ça marche, yes.
Ça marche.
I like that. Yeah. It's like it's great. It's a deal.
Yep.
Right?
It's a deal.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, Bernard, I'm back from New York City.
Uh-huh.
And Bernard, j'en ai marché un coup.
Ah.
I did a lot of walking.
A lot of walking.
And one thing, Bernard, that I did not go for in New York.
What
because
was it?
Sometimes you say, j'ai marché, means I went for it, right?
Right.
You know, in New York, they have those vendors.
Street vendors?
Street vendors.
Hot dogs?
Well, not those. You think hot dog, you think food. Like, what do you think women think when they go to New York?
Shoes? Purses?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, so don't tell me you bought purses from the back of a pickup truck.
Or no, Bernard. I just told you, j'ai pas marché.
T'as pas marché.
I didn't go for it.
You didn't go for it.
I was too chicken. It's scary. You know, they have those guys and they go and they have those microphones because they're connected with someone who's in the back alley, right? And they go, Rolex, Gucci, Louis Vuitton, you know, and they fake ID, you know, and they want you to follow them.
Yeah.
But j'ai pas marché, Bernard.
But you know, Joanne, they're legitimate, those things. Really? No.
Not those guys, Bernard.
Yeah, no, I'm telling you. I saw a documentary on it. And
they're
really? They're originals. Mm-hmm. They really are originals. They're just overstock. And that's a way for the big designers to distribute the projects, the produce.
Là, vous essayez de me faire marcher.
Yes.
You're pulling my leg. And I didn't fall for it.
That's right. J'essayais de te faire marcher.
You're so great. And this time, I did not.
You
it's probably the first time in my life, Bernard, that I I could sense that you were trying to do this.
Faire quelqu'un marcher, to pull,
faire marcher
pull
quelqu'un.
Somebody's leg.
Yes.
I didn't get it today. I wasn't able to succeed.
You didn't get it today. Yeah. That's too bad, Laura. Yeah. But I love that, you know, we often say that. Faire marcher quelqu'un is, you know, to pull somebody's leg.
Yes.
Or, one expression that I like is marcher comme sur des roulettes.
Oh, I love it, you know? Like, to marcher comme sur des roulettes.
How was your trip to New York? Yeah. I would say ça a marché comme sur des roulettes.
Yeah.
Everything was perfect.
Right.
Just like clockwork, right?
Like at C'est la vie.
Like C'est la vie, right?
All right.
Alors, Bernard.
Ça marche des roulettes.
On se revoit la semaine prochaine,
la semaine
ça marche.
Prochaine. Joanne Blais, C'est la vie's word lady, and she's with us each week right here on C'est la vie. Throughout this season, we've been checking in regularly with Kelly Banks. He's 10 years old, and last fall, he started late French immersion in grade 5 at Land O'Lakes Senior Public School. It's in Berks Falls, Ontario. We heard about Kelly's concerns when he started. We heard him learn to sing O Canada in French, and we enjoyed hearing about his school play at Christmas time. Well, now the school year is just about over, and we decided to check in with him one last time. And as you'll hear, the approach is very different from Steve Kaufman's.
Hi, it's Kelly again. It's almost the end of the school year, and pretty much since Christmas, what we've been working on is not so much learning how to say this in French, pretty much like the verbs, to know how to spell them, or like when you're writing out a word to make sure that you have the right ending on it. When I started at the beginning of the year, I didn't know that there was any of these verbs. I thought it was just if it had an E on the end, then you put le. If it didn't, then it was la. And that was it pretty much. Then it was just like this means that. So like taking it from the angle that I thought it was before I started, I thought by now I'd be speaking a little bit more French, but I didn't realize about the verbs. I thought it was pretty much just verbs were pretty simple, but I didn't realize that there was this whole thing about them. It's kind of the ones that we learned at the beginning of the year, I tend to remember more, I think, because those ones were pretty much just regular verbs, and they were all in present tense. Then we started doing past tense and future tense, and then we got more into the irregular verbs. Can you just hang on for a second? I have my verb book. Okay. So I have a little dictionary that tells us the verbs. So, we started off with simple verbs like parler, speak, and then the two main ones that are irregular are avoir, to have, and être, which means am, is, or
for example,
are,
répondre,
to answer. They take être, so you have to. They're called Vandertamp verbs.
In the past tense, you write it normally, only lire spelled L-I-R-E.
Chante, to sing. Vain, femme, to close. And par, to speak.
You just put end on you.
So
but
the regular ones, and if you
get
part of
that
from the present to there,
in the
present,
you just have,
there's sometimes
mainly just in the past.
The hardest thing this year would probably just be the verbs, memorizing them. Because there's, I think it's about 20 or 25 forms you have to remember. And some of them we haven't even heard of yet. So probably the verbs have been the big challenge and will be the big challenge next year. Probably the best thing about this year was, doing like the little extra stuff like the play, because it's fun, and you're kind of like learning them. Like
I know most of the play off by heart, and that kind of helps you to know this stuff. And, like, and it's a play that, like, I've been, like, I've known that play since kindergarten. So, you know, like, not like, oh, what happens then? So you kind of, like, match them together. So that really helps you to learn. And it's better than in your classroom figuring out what the verbs mean. So next year, we have to still learn to figure more about the verbs, but then we have to jump into words. As by grade 7 and 8, you're expected to be able to talk a little bit in French. So that will probably be a big thing, is to jump from the verbs to that. And still have to learn a little bit more about the verbs. So that will probably be the big challenge next year. I'm feeling good about this year. I was expecting a little bit more before I knew about the verbs. So if I knew about the verbs, I would be satisfied with the year. This is the last time I'll be talking to you this year. It's been fun to share with you what's happened this year. Well, hopefully I'll talk to you next year. Until then, I'm Kelly Banks in Birch Falls.
Thanks, Kelly, and have a great summer. Kelly Banks is in late French immersion in grade 5 at Land O'Lakes Senior Public School. It's in Birch Falls, Ontario. Well, what do you think about Kelly's experience learning French this year? Or Mr. Kaufman's approach? You can let us know at 514-597-4486, 514-597-4486. Our email address is clv@cbc.ca. Elizabeth Robertson is our associate producer. C'est la vie is produced by Allison Cook. And until next week, I'm Bernard Saint-Laurent saying so long for C'est la vie.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.